those cohorts and that work. If you'd like to hear more information on that, and you're not a part of our newsletter already, feel free when you leave tonight to put your name and email address down, and we'll add that. And there are seminars and workshops and trainings both for professionals and non-professionals. So we're trying to offer quite a few offerings to kind of climb into this material, of which if you haven't had a taste, you will tonight with Alfred. With that, let me just introduce our professor this evening. Dr. Longo was born in Austria in 1951 and studied medicine and psychology at universities of Innsbruck, Rome, Toulouse, and Vienna. After years of hospital work in general medicine and psychiatry, he started a private practice in psychotherapy, general medicine, and clinical psychology in Vienna. At the same time, he began his close collaboration with Viktor Frankl. He is the founder and president of the International Society for Logotherapy and Existential Analysis in Vienna. Dr. Longo is a constant lecturer at the universities of Vienna, Moscow, Santiago de Chile, and Mendoza. He is also the founder of the state-approved training school of existential analytical psychotherapy and was the vice president of the International Federation of Psychotherapy from 2002 to 2010. Dr. Longo has over 300 scholarly publications to his credit. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Longo this evening.
Thank you, Thomas, for introducing and organizing this evening. Hello, everybody. I'm very pleased to be here, to meet you, and to be able to talk with you and to reflect with you upon a specific theme which is interesting for all of us, I think. Let's talk about, no, not sex. Let's talk about life. I don't switch the theme, but it's also a sexy theme, I think. So, life, human life, what is it? Heinrich Heine once said that human life isn't simply something. It's the chance for something. This is quite an existential thinking to put into the intermediate between of me and my life the term chance. Chance means that this is a challenge, a possibility. There's something like freedom in between me and my life. It's not done simply by being born. We are not determined by nature, instincts, as we see the life of animals is. We have a specific kind of life. The human life is has to be constructed, has to be formed, guided, and the main person in our life are we ourselves. Everyone has a chance to change life to a certain degree, of course. We are not totally free, but relatively free. We all have possibilities. And to see the possibilities and to apply them constructively in our life, this is what, this is our task. This is our challenge. So, as in an existential approach to psychology and to in an existential view of life, it is very central to see the term of freedom, of choice, of decision, as which are specific terms of freedom, to see freedom in the center of our life, which is when we ask ourselves what is essential or characteristic for the human being. We can say, or at least in the existential perspective, we see freedom, the human freedom, to be central. The fact that we experience that we are not forced to do what we do. And if we are forced, we feel awkward. Why? because it doesn't correspond to our essence, to what we really are. So we all have a strong tendency to work on maintaining, keeping our freedom, enlarging it, make use of it, and live in a way that what we do freely can does correspond to ourselves, has connection to ourselves, to make use of our freedom in a way that we can see ourselves in the mirror, that we can detect ourselves in what we do. This is a difference to the arbitrary act, to make a free choice in a way that this is really my life, my choice, that it corresponds to who I am, means to make a responsible decision. So freedom and responsibility are corresponding terms. We do not have to be responsible. We are not forced to act responsibly. We are so free that we can act irresponsibly. We are so free that we can become guilty, which means acting irresponsibly. But we have the chance to be responsible. We have the chance to do things which are constructive, which lead to an intensification of values, of a worthy life. This chance is ours. But how can we realize that? This is the theme of our talk tonight. Sometimes we experience, or people come to us and say, I don't see the meaning in what I do. I see no more meaning in continuation of my relationship, for instance. It's so bothering me. It's so terrible that I don't want to continue because it has no more meaning. Or in the job. The same may happen there, that people come, or we may experience, it's really meaningless. Why should I continue? Why should I do this nonsense day after day? It makes me sick. You may even experience, or people may come and say, I don't see any meaning in my life at all. It's so boring, you know, all this struggling and this effort and this suffering and losing and so why should I continue? It has no meaning. And not finding meaning in life is really a hard issue because it is a mortal existential experience. It leads to suicide. Suicidal people suffer from not seeing meaning in what they, in that life in which they are. We all may have suicidal tendencies. It may happen in every life that we undergo difficult situations or that we do not see any future for the moment, we lose the hope, and we can become suicidal. And maybe most of us already thought once in a difficult situation, how would it be if I committed suicide? Then it would be over. I wouldn't have to carry along the weight or to suffer or to be disoriented and so on. What a relief death can be. Suicidal persons know that. And death is a hope. And if there is no meaning in life which holds us back, then we are prone to even try suicide or commit it. So meaning is a really existential tie. Which vinculates us with existence, with our life. Meaninglessness, therefore, is a deep suffering, a crucial suffering, which we cannot support for a longer time. We come to reactions if we become sick if we have to suffer from meaninglessness. And we do whatever we can to change meaningless situations. So when people suffer from meaninglessness in a relationship, for instance, they are ready to go to change the relationship because it's unbearable to continue in a meaningless situation. But what does it mean? Let us try to understand this experience or this feeling of meaninglessness. What, when we have a feeling of something is meaningless, what does that say? If something is meaningless, it says, I don't see a value in what I do or what I have to undergo. It's not worthy for me. And I don't see what, at the end, that there comes out a value. So it's for nothing. The feeling of meaninglessness means I do or experience something for nothing. So if we have this feeling of meaninglessness, this can be translated in existential terms as if I continue that direction, this will lead to nothing. This will lead to a dead end. I do not experience the value right now, and or I don't see the value which will come out at the end. Why should I continue this relationship, for instance, if day after day we are hassling, struggling, if there is no pleasure, no fun, no warmth in it, no real dialogue? Then we do not experience any value. And why should I continue something which has no value? The human being is constructed such that we want to understand what we do. If we do not understand, this means a rejection, a devaluation of our rationality. We are free beings, and as free beings we have to make decisions, and to make decision means I have to know about what is going on to make a decision which fits into that situation. Otherwise I could throw the coin and follow what comes up. But the real decision means I am investing myself, I am investing my time, I am connecting myself, I have to pay for it, suffer for it, I will gain something, I hopefully will gain something. So therefore I must be oriented so that for the sake to come to a good end. Meaninglessness means when I look around, this doesn't lead to anything. There is no good shows up. I experience it day after day. What is the benefit of what I do? So, investment of time, of energy, undergoing suffering is impossible for a human being when we do not see the why. Why am I doing it? And the why can only be a value which shows up, something good. I may have difficulties in a relationship, and we may have problems, and this is normal in a good relationship. In any good relationship, there show up problems. But the quality of a relationship shows up in the fact that we are able to deal with the problems and to dialogue them, to face them, to work them through, that we are capable to resolve obstacles. This is the quality of a good relationship. It's not the quality, it's not that we do not, we never have a problem, but that we can resolve. As long as I see that we can resolve a problem, as long as I see a value in the future. The feeling of meaning means I have the feeling, the hope, the perception that something good will show up at the end. We will work it through, we will struggle, maybe we will undergo a hard time, but at the end it will be good. And also when we have to undergo a difficult disease, we can hope that at the end there will be I will be healed. And then the value is there for which we are waiting. This gives us orientation. Meaning in itself means existential understanding, means that we are directed towards meaning. It is like a sign which points towards a value in the future. So, in other words, if I continue that way in my relationship or in my job or in my life, the way I live, if I continue that way, this direction will lead me to a value. I will gain a value. I follow this track, I follow this way, and it will lead me home, it will lead me to the city I want to go, it will lead me to that quality of relationship which I want to have, which I am longing for. It will lead me to the self-development in my job, which will lead me to the amount of money which I will earn, etc., etc. Value is something which is good for me, which is worthy. And so, as long as I can see or feel or intend or hope for a value, as long something is meaningful. So, if I suffer from meaninglessness, this means that the direction I'm going leads to nothing, leads into a desert, but not to the oasis. You understand? What is meaning? Existential meaning is an orientation towards a valuable life experience, action. A value must be felt, must be visible, must be seen, must be intended. Having no meaning means either I do not feel the value right now, there may be values, but I don't experience them, or I don't see them in the future. Nothing will turn out. Either in the presence, there is no value, or in the future, there is no value. But this is very helpful, because the term meaning, purpose and meaning, this sensing of a value, this term is quite tricky in English, in German. It's not so difficult in Latin languages, like in Spanish. Meaning means, meaning, the word for meaning in Spanish is senso, or in Italian, in French, le sens. For them, it's clear, because they use that term constantly. And if you go through Buenos Aires, you see streets where it is written unique meaning, senso único, which means one way. Meaning, senso, in these Latin languages, means literally to be directed, to have a direction. In German, sin, it is more difficult, it is that the older understanding is lost. and in English, you need two or three words to describe senso, meaning, purpose, and sense. So, sense is a bit closer to that experience of value. Meaning is very abstract, and purpose is close to a function. Sense, direction. Have a direction. If I have a direction in my life, then my life is meaningful. When my life is meaningful, I do not think about meaning anymore. I do not have to think. Because when I'm little, Frank brought this example and said, when you are listening, when you're on the concert and listen to beautiful music, and if you enjoy it, and your neighbor is hitting your shoulder and asking, do you think right now your life is meaningful? And you will say, you are stupid. Listen to the music. That's not a question in that music. So when we are fulfilled by a value, when we experience a good value, then the question of meaning doesn't arise. When we are in a good relationship, that's not a question of meaning. It doesn't show up. The term meaning shows up, or the questioning of meaning shows up in the direction. Is no longer there. So, we are very sensitive for me. We feel it, and we feel it sometimes before we admit it consciously. The feeling is much finer than our thinking sometimes. So, we should not step over this feeling of meaninglessness. We are talking about meaning as an orientation in our life. And we understand now what it means on an existential level. We need meaning to be able to support and be motivated, to support what we have to undergo and to be motivated to do something. Nietzsche once said that he who has a why can support almost every how. When I know why, what for, you can support almost any condition. And the life of Viktor Frankl is an example of that. To undergo concentration camps is very difficult. What is the meaning? So much suffering. This is really not a good one. Suffering, hunger, dehumiliation, and pain, and hopelessness. How can people survive such situations? And sometimes we have difficult life situations even outside the concentration camp, which are so full of hopelessness. How can we support it? For Frankl, it were three elements which turn out, you can take them as an example, for the main roles to find meaning. One was he really longed for rewriting his first book. on yoga therapy. So what I'm reporting here about me is taken from practice, notion, experience, and investigation. But he personally experienced that this was something which lifted him up, which raised his head, his helped him to find the power, the energy to stand it through. The waiting to have the possibility to write this book again, which he has already written but was lost when he was deported into the concentration camp. A book on which he wrote 4 years. So something valuable to do, something which is important, which is impacting one's life. The second was, he was longing to meet again his wife and his mother. He was together with his father. His father died in the concentration camp. He was almost present in that, or the night before he died. He met him for the last time. But he was eager to meet his mother and his wife. He was just married 2 years before he was deported. And so this was the relational issue. The value of other person, the value of experiencing something good in a relationship, he not necessarily be in a relationship, but for him it was especially. So this made him do whatever he could to survive. And the third was, he practiced, has undergone a period of nihilism just before he came into the concentration camp. And then in the time when he was in the concentration camp, he started to become religious. And so it was his connection to God, which helped him to overcome that situation. This means a connection to a deeper understanding of life, a connection which says, I know what for I'm undergoing this, because life is something which I didn't produce myself, is a gift, and with this gift, for this gift, I have a certain responsibility. These three elements are the nucleus of something which Franklin described before he went into the concentration camp on a theoretical basis of taking it from Max Scheler's philosophy. And then he had this experimental cruises, this crucial experiment in life. He named it as being three main roads to meaning, three categories to find meaning. The one is the experiential value. They are always talking about value. Experiential value. To experience something good. Maybe relationship, may it be a music, may it be an encounter, may it be art or nature or a warm bath or a good food, whatever I can experience as being good makes my life actually good and therefore meaningful. It's worth living. The second, or the other, leg on which we are standing is the productive value. To produce something valuable. To work. To write a letter, to make music, to clean your apartment, to cook a meal, to wash dishes, to make something productive. And to experience, and to experience the value, to enjoy what we are creating. This makes our life more meaningful.
also. So, experiencing and producing values gives orientation to our life. These are the normal, is the normal way how we construct our life. We look after good experiences, and we look after, we look for what we do that is productive and brings out a value. And if we do not see the value, it is meaningless. But there are situations where both categories do not fit or are not applicable. For instance, when we are too depressing, or when we are in a deep grief and we have lost somebody by a death or so, we are too paralyzed, too depressed, too out of ourselves to really be able to produce something productive, or we cannot enjoy it anyway. And then Freud described a category which is a category which has to be learned in during life, because we are not naturally born for them. We are born for enjoying meal and chocolate and so and this experiential values and productive values. Already as a child we play with our wooden blocks and so on, create things. So we are morbid, yeah, installed for these first two categories of experiential values and the productive values. But to face a fate, to face something which we cannot change and which is leads to a loss which makes us suffering, to face that, we have to learn to bear such frustration, such losses. And we can learn more or less. This is something children already have to learn with 2 or 3 years, that they cannot get everything they want, to learn to suffer. And a great, it is a great challenge to the human being to deal with pain and suffering and losses. Why? Because by definition, this is a deconstruction of value. This is a loss of value. And what is a loss of value has no meaning. So how to continue when we do not see meaning, when we do not experience value? It is almost impossible. And it is important to admit that a loss of a value, to become sick, for instance, or to have an accident, also has no meaning in itself, because it has no value. The possible meaning is in the way how I deal with it. To see it as a challenge. This makes us resilient. When we see things that happen to us as a challenge, as a stimulus to do something extra, to do something more, to make something out of it. We can, of course, we sometimes are paralyzed, but sooner or later, after the shock, we are still regaining our power. And the question is, what can I do that the negative is not escalating? That out of that what happened, that having a cancer, for instance, is not the end of my life. There is life with cancer. If I can admit it, if I can accept it, if I get ready. Of course, this is a great grief to lose and to let be all this what is gone now when I come into such a situation. And it is good if we have people who accompany us when we have great losses. Because alone is sometimes too hard. Life can be really difficult if we have to undergo it by ourselves, alone. We are social beings. Even Frank, who dedicated his life to the concept of meaning, even he had at least two situations in the concentration camp, and after the concentration camp, another situation where he possibly would not have overcome the situation if he hadn't had somebody who accompanied him. Somebody who saved him in the concentration camp, take his soup, it was a bit salty, warm water with one pea, a pie in it, take his soup and eat. If they forced him to eat, otherwise he would possibly have died. So this is not to be ashamed that we need other beings here to suffer from difficult life situations. But we can take them as a question, as a challenge, which I'm that what happens to us in an adversity which happens to us means that we are us. And this is a background of understanding of meaning. So the third category, I come to this background in a minute. The third category means to deal with situations, unchangeable situations, where I cannot do any more, when I, as long as I can treat against, I should treat. This is beautiful. When I cannot do it, or when somebody is dead, what can I do then? I can still do something, a little bit of freedom is left in the way I deal with it. When I cannot change the outer world, I still can change myself. And I can make decisions about my behavior. And this means maintain the human dignity to live our essence of being free. And to find out the least possibilities we have where we can realize our freedom. This is so important. I remember the situation Frank describes in his book on the concentration camp in English, it's under the name Man's Search for Meaning, where he said they tried to destroy us, to humiliate us in the concentration camp. But what helped us was this little freedom which remained. What was this little freedom? This little freedom was that when they have been called on the place before the barracks, when they have been called in the morning to avert the neighbor, the body, and said, "Do you see this bread of the rising sun?" Or to say good morning. This was something human, something which could not be taken away. It was so little, but it let them feel that they are still persons and not numbers, not figures. And we have it. In my experience, in decades of experience in psychotherapy, I can say that many problems arise out of this, that people do not accept the little chance, possibility, when they have, because they want more. And this, it is so important that we can be humble and take the few we have. And if we do not have more, to live that few means we maintain our our dignity, we maintain our, we live our essence, we keep upright. So this is the third category. When we are forced to deal with a difficult life situation, that we can change ourselves, we can work on our attitude in the sense that we stop the escalation of the negative. We can, often having lost a relationship or being incurably sick or so, we can react and behave differently. We can get campaign constantly, make the world around us curious, and or we can behave in a way that we can look into our faces and keep up our self-image and be in harmony with ourselves, that we can see ourselves, detect ourselves again in what we do. Or we can take it as something which we do in our, for our religious belief for God. There are many different ways. Or we can try to ease in our children, our family, the caring, or whatever. So there are little elements, little aspects. There are these little good morning to the body, these small possibilities. But you know the step from 0 to 1 is bigger than the step from 1 to 100. To step out of the passivity is so important. It's maybe not much I can do, but that little changes everything. I find this is very important. Of course, this may be a narcissistic trauma, because I deserve more. Why should I deal with that little? This means, this is the proof of our love for life. If we do it, even if it is little, if we care for a flower, even if it is a small one and not a big rose. If we talk to somebody, to a child, even if I do not get paid. Attitudinal values was the term which Randy gave this third category. The value is in the attitude. And this, the attitude, I'm changing myself and I cannot change the world, the situation. Because there is death, because there is security. Then I can change myself. This is a possibility. We often need accompaniment to be able to realize it. But it is also important to know about it, that this is possible for human beings. Maybe not for me and not for now, but theoretically it is possible. And we can work on it, and we can mature. And then the more experienced we are in dealing with suffering, with pain, with losses, the more laid back we can be with the life situation, with these losses. It's not a need to do it. It's a chance. It's a possibility. And it is therefore a human form to realize one's existence. Because it is a chance. And I can decide for it. And I can decide for it responsibly. This means in a way that I can identify it. Because I find myself in it. Because it corresponds to me. This is so good if we do our life in such a way that I can find myself, then I'm not lost, then I'm encountering me This is a great meaning of existence, to, that we can be in the world and are not lost and not alone, that we are with ourselves in a constant relationship, in a resonance with ourselves. That we can become more ourselves in what we do. Why else should we be in the world? To be really in the world. We spoke about the three main roads: meaning, to experience something pleasurable, valuable, to do something good or valuable, you can enjoy and find pleasure in doing it, or see that it's creative. And if nothing goes, the attitude, the change in myself, the refer to my deep relationship to life. The background of this third category is that I have feeling for the quality of life. That I have a deep feeling that life in itself must be something good. Maybe my own life is not that good as it could be, but it could be good, and I connect to this capacity or possibility which is inherent in life. Attitude in life. I now want to come back to something which I announced before, the dealing with it. Difficult life situation needs a specific attitude. So far we spoke about meaning, meaninglessness, what we mean, categories of meaning, and now I want to speak about a specific dynamic or a central key to find meaning in one's life. It is still taking Frank's logotherapy notion about meaning, finding, working with people. The attitude, or the key, the general key to find meaning is a certain openness. An openness, you would say today, a mindfulness on the one hand, and an openness towards a phenomenological openness towards what is there. Partly call it existential term. To find meaning in every life situation, to hasten the probability to find some meaning, means to make a special term in the attitude. Normally, most people, or we normally go through the world and our life by thinking, what does it, by looking at where do I gain, where do I get something? When I do this, what do I get for that? And this is an appropriate and important thing. But sometimes, we cannot find meaning if we get stick on this attitude, and it needs a turn of 180 degrees. And instead of asking what do I want from this situation, from what I do, when I do this, what do I get? Instead of asking what do I want, to turn it around and to let oneself be asked by the situation, in the term of what does this situation want from me? I said, even with cancer, there is still life. For instance, what does this situation now want from me? What am I asked by this situation? And this attitude, this existential term, is valid not only in difficult life situations, but in our life situation, because we are free human beings. This means we have to decide constantly. We must decide. We are not free not to decide. We are forced to our freedom, because our freedom is essential to us. So whenever I am aware of something, this being aware means I'm asked. I'm asked this basic existential question: what are you going to do? How are you going to decide? There's the chair. In principle, this is already a question, because this chair is like asking me, are you going to make use of me or not? How are you deciding upon it? So, as free human beings, we are always in this area of being questioned, being asked of these possibilities which are around us, of which we can make use, and on which we have to decide. Therefore, we are constantly asked, and this is a very beautiful aspect of life, or view on our existence, because to be asked makes us important in our life. To be asked in a relationship means the other gives me an importance. When I no more ask in the relationship about what are you planning for a weekend, when in a relationship the partner says simply, well, I go skiing, whatever you want to do, you can, if you want it, you can go with me, but I go. And if you don't, it's up to you. Being asked is the relation, is opening space, is an invitation, or invitation of participation. And so, our life, our existence, our world is a constant asking for invitation if we understand and see ourselves better. And this is not a myth or just euphemic understanding or something. It is a fact which derives from the anthropological understanding. Being aware that we are free in our essence, this means that we are constantly free, that we have constantly made decisions, that these making decisions is combined with an asking, what are you going to do? My life turns around me. Existentially seen, I am the center of the world. Every human being is the center of the world, of his or her world. And this world around us asks me, invites me to participate, to relate, and to give answers. And we cannot even not give answers. Because where there is a question, there is an answer. You cannot not answer the question. Whatever you do is an answer. Even if you do not give an answer, this is an answer. So we are in this dynamics, in this constant dynamics of dialogue with what is within us and around us. We are constantly in this speech of being asked and answered. Answering, if I give the answer in this total way, if I give the answer in an active participation, in actively giving myself in, if I give the answer totally, then we say we are really responding to the question. And when we are really responding, and it is really our answer, then we are responsive to the situation. So responsibility, this knowledge over thousands of years means to give personal answers. To life's a question. Answer means it is free, it is not determined, it is my decision. To give an answer is speech, is dialogue, is open. And if it's really taking seriously what I have understood and give my answer in the active
answer. Attention visitors, the time is now 8 o'clock. Visiting hours are now over. Thank you and have a great evening.
So, ignore that. This is working hard, not this. And if I keep my answer actively in a deed or in an action, then I give my response to life, and I'm responsible. So being asked is very human. We can't even understand it that way, or put it in that, or summarize it that way, that you can say, being human means being us. But the simple fact that human beings are not fully determined, but have a certain space where they can make decisions. Being human means being us, and life, what consists life? How does a human being come to life? By giving his answer to the situation. My answer normally is an act, what I do. By entering into this dialogue, this taking up this openness to what the situation asks me, to what life asks me, and giving my best possible answer, then I come to life. Then we can experience that this is a living, this is a has a taste, this is a fulfilling way of being there, being present. We speak about the existential term as the main key to find meaning. The central attitude. This existential term in itself is mindfulness and openness. Openness, setting aside my goals, my ideas, my wishes, my plans. These are important for daily life. But when we do not find enough meaning, then it is helpful to set them aside for a certain period of time and to look around and say, well, instead of constantly asking me, the world, what is valuable for me, what it can bring me and give me, I can now enter the other position, go into the other position and let me ask. By the situation. The situation may ask me, yeah, what life wants from me? And this is especially valuable when we have problems, difficulties, when something doesn't go the way we like to have it. Then to lay back for a minute and look at the situation and say, well, what does it want from me? What is the chance, the challenge which can be connected or which is possibly connected with that situation? How can I contribute to improve the situation? What does depend on me? This is so healthy. This is the reason why people are resilient. the main, the central piece of resilience is to take situations as a chance, to see that meaning in the situation, that they want something from me. It takes me out of being a victim, or so old, solely a victim. It takes me out from the paralysis. It is activating me on a modest level, maybe. But it makes me co-constructive in my own life, in the situation. And it gives me back my human dignity, the capacity to be present and to apply my freedom. Existential turn means coming out from simply being exposed to a situation into an active participation. A turn of 180 degrees of this normal attitude in which we go through the world and let us ask by the situation. I now want to speak a bit, 10 minutes more, about another central issue which leads to meaning in life and to lead to, which brings fulfillment into life. We say before that it is essential for a human being to live one's freedom. Hopefully in a responsible way. This being free can be found in ourselves psychologically, experientially, in a inner resonance. This being free is very abstract, it's very philosophical. But if we look at this concept on a psychological, through a psychological perspective, we find a certain, a specific experience in which we realize this central, this essence of the human being. If that what we do is really desired, is really wanted, is really corresponding to me, then I experience something which we call having an inner consent. Having an inner consent means I agree. Sitting here may apply to me. Do I have an inner consent to sit here? So, do I really want to be here? Or in other words, do I feel, experience an inner yes to be there right now? Did I ask myself this? Maybe you say, well, this is something I do constantly, this is very normal to ask myself, do I feel an inner yes? Do I have inner consent? Am I in harmony with myself and the situation when I do that? Others may say, well, I'm not so aware about this. I'm not even sure if I have inner consent. The variety is quite big. But inner consent is something which is which cannot be made. I do not mean that inner consent a rationality, a calculation, that we logically come to inner consent by saying, well, if I check all the possibilities I have tonight, this is maybe under most or whatever. So, no, it is something which comes out of the mood. It is a sentiment. It must be felt, this inner consent. It is a felt, yes, it is more, essential, it's even more, it is an openness towards the inside, an openness, a mindfulness to what is going on within me. I'm exposing myself to a situation. Before I come here, I read or hear about this, and then I imagine, I read the title, I see the description, and then I imagine, would that be something interesting for me? And then, you, at least you who are here, you decide. This decision is more or less in the consent. I say, okay, let's go. Maybe it's not my consent, but my friend's plans to go there. And then I said, and he said, come with me. And then I said, okay, if you want, I go with you. I know better, a better idea for tonight. It doesn't matter. It's okay. I don't care. I come. That's not a real consent. It's half a consent. More consent to the friend than to the recitation. Sometimes that way that we make decisions, or somebody sends me, or a professor sends me to a lecture, or whatever, then I give more consent of not having a conflict with that person, not what I really do. So this is very valuable. Having made the decision to come here is more or less a consent. Then, while I'm sitting here, I'm constantly exposed to this having a consent problem. Maybe up to 8 o'clock you have the consent, but now it's already too late. So, do I still have consent? And he said, having a consent is so basic. Not only for me, it's basic more for something else. The result of living with inner consent is fulfillment. Inner fulfillment. This is a form of happiness. Inner happiness. Having this inner consent, or looking after this inner consent, let me go back again, means I'm aware, I'm interested, I'm open to what comes up in me, what starts to speak within me, what resonance comes up when I am sitting here or when I'm reading about this conference, and I decide, oh, it appeals me, and I think the resonance, oh, that could be interesting, and so I keep my consent. Then I'm sitting here. Hopefully, it is what I expect, or what I imagine. But if it's not, then the consent goes away. And it starts speaking within me and saying, well, that's not that what I expected, that's not that, that's not that. I do not see the value of what is often possible. I cannot do anything with that. Then the consent goes away. In the contrary, when it corresponds to me, I find it interesting, then I have no difficulty to feel that resonance that, oh, that's good, that's interesting. I can say yes to that, at least until I talk. You see, this is something in this openness, which we are as persons, we are exposed to resonances, or the impressions we have, the information we get, the experiences we made coming to us and produce within us a resonance, connect with our life capacity, with our power, which is life, and brings up a feeling which says, oh, with that I am corresponding. This has something in correspondence with me. Then comes up the inner, yes, that's good. Yes, this corresponds. Yes, this attracts me. Yes, this has a value. Yes, I want to be there. And inner consent is motivating me, is mobilizing me, is this deep personal freedom coming out of my essence. I do not make it. I am receiving. I am open. I am mindful of what is going on. And then I became a player. Or most often, I do not even think about it. I'm not conscious about it. I just feel it. And I feel harmony. And I feel energy, brighter light. This is inner consent. Inner consent is basic for fulfillment in life. Why? What happens when I do something with inner consent? It happens that I essentially am there. The essence of a human being is being a person means that we are able to make decisions, that we are able to use our freedom. Inner consent, this comes out freely. I do not make it. I shouldn't even try to produce it. It goes wrong. I'm just accepting or taking up what is stimulated, resonates within me. So we are much less controlling ourselves, and in the essence, we cannot control the freedom we are. We are detected by our life situation. And we detect ourselves and to what we find resonance and to what not. Some people find resonance to mathematics, and others to literature, and others to Potter, and so on. And not, this is individually different. This essence is stimulated, and if we consider the inner consent and live with awareness of this possibility, then we bring ourselves much more into the world, because this essence is stimulated. And when I'm sitting here and I do something with inner consent, something enormous arises. Engagement and commitment. Commitment means having inner consent, otherwise there's no commitment. Commitment, in the Latin word, commitment means I'm sending myself with my action. And when I do something with commitment, I am really present. I bring myself onto the world. I am repeating my birth in every situation where I am committed. This is in line of being born, put into that world. Commitment brings up real presence in a talk, in a work, in listening music, in playing music, in reading, in writing, in jogging. I can do everything committed. Being personally present. And when I do something committedly, I gain the most. Because I'm there. Because I'm present. And when I'm present and I do something valuable, committed, then I am in full touch with the value. And when I'm in full touch with the value, this is fulfilling me. This gives me the most. And when it gives me the most, then it is filling me up. It is fulfilling me. This is the great gain. The gain of living with inner consent is to be able to do things with commitment. And the personal gain is to come to a fulfillment. So whenever people suffer from having from emptiness in their life, we can say, generally speaking, they do not live committed. They do not live with enough inner consent. They should work on themselves why they cannot come to a real yes. This yes cannot be produced. It cannot be dictated from outside. Parents cannot do it. Bosses cannot do it. It must come out from myself. It cannot be forced. It can only be I can only expose myself and in touch. And then look what it says. And if I do not have inner consent, I shouldn't do it. Please don't do anything more anymore where you do not have inner consent. Washing dishes or working. If you don't have inner consent, let it be. Because it's not worth living. It does not give inner fulfillment. But we can do functional life. We can. But this is emptying. Only when I make myself present, I will be dominated by life with inner fulfillment. Inner fulfillment is something which gives us so much. It gives us the energy to continue. It gives us a full life. It gives us orientation. Inner fulfillment is happiness. Happiness in life means having been there really, having been present. This is like the motto of the Olympic Games, having been there is the aim. If this doesn't work out well, then of course we need a deeper work, because this inner yes is something very complicated. In many situations it works by itself, it comes out by itself, but sometimes it's so difficult. And we have contradictions and ambivalences, and we have anxiety, fears, and we do not see clearly. We do not come to that feeling of inner consent. And if it doesn't show up by itself, we can help ourselves. And this describes the main theory of the actual existential analysis of the development after Frankl. We describe main structures of existence. There are four structures of existence which have to be considered because they are all included in this inner yes. There is the first structure is the relationship to the world. I have to deal with reality. Or my life can happen only in this reality. It's not helpful for the continuation of life if I relate to my dreams or fantasies. They are nice, they are productive, they are creative, etc. They open spaces, but then I have to walk on this earth and I have to eat and to sleep and to earn money, and the love may be as big as it is, but there must be something to eat at home. These are realities, we have to live with that. So this life has to be to take place amongst these conditions of existence. This means I have to take what is there to accept, to endure sometimes situations that I can be here in this world. So having inner yes means saying yes through my conditions, because under these conditions I can live only. I have to relate to the world, to the reality, to my body, to the physical things, to the economic things, etc. This is one dimension of existence, which is included in this inner consent. the yes to what is given. This means sometimes a lot of work to be able to accept what is there, what happens to me, to, and not to reject, not to live against reality. This is so effort-taking if we try to live against reality. And we are losing, because reality is stronger here. Another dimension of human existence is the fact that we are living, that we are born, grow, become old, we die. The fact that we feel our life, that we experience it. We are not stones, we are from flesh and blood. So this experiencing life, we have to deal with that. So inner consent means also saying a yes to this joy and suffering, to pleasure and pain, to that what makes life, that what we experience constantly. There may be anxiety which inhibit us to say yes to life. So you see, there is another aspect which has to be combined in this quadruple yes, in this multifaceted yes in which we are. The third dimension of existence is the fact that I'm me. For the whole life, I'm me. I'm never somebody else. I have to live with me. I cannot get separated from me. I cannot get divorced from me. This is difficult. Because divorce is sometimes a good escape. But with me, there is no escape except you. Of course, you sign on is a help. I wouldn't suggest that. Just in case you didn't know, but I am constantly going, and it's sometimes hard to be oneself, to live with oneself, we can become guilty, and we can become ashamed, and we can have low self-esteem, not trust in ourselves, be hurt personally and ridiculed. And who is me? Even that is a difficult question. Can I be authentic? All these big questions about personhood, personality, saying yes, having inner consent means I'm in harmony with me. I have access to myself. I know who I am, what I feel, at least who I am, what corresponds to me. You see how complex it is, this inner consent. And the fourth dimension is the dimension of meaning, of development, of future, of great context. We spoke about this. This corresponds to the logotherapy, this fucking described. So these are the four dimensions of human existence, the relation to the world in which we are born, the relation to the life we are part of, the relation to ourselves as a person, to the other as a person, to the authentic being, and the relation to the greater context and future, to the development which is inherent in me. So if there are difficulties in coming to a greater consent, then we have to have a closer look on these preconditions of fulfillment of life, preconditions of consent. You have in this yellow sheet, yellow pamphlet, you have a short summary of these four dimensions if you want to have a closer look. And you also find in the internet, in the home pages, articles on this if you want to read more on it. And for those who want, I have got 3-4 books which you can buy here for $20. Yeah. This is what I wanted to talk about, and I wish and hope that we can continue and apply this and be maybe a bit more aware if I do have inner consent or not to what I do. If I do not have inner consent, then we take it seriously and try to change the situation. Or stop doing it as soon as possible. The more we do with a weak inner consent or no inner consent, the more prone we are for depressions, for burnouts, for anxiety, for addiction, etc. The whole psychopathology can come out of this. The more we do with inner consent, the more fulfillment we will experience, and the healthier our psyche will be. And I hope and wish that this evening contributed to that in our future. Thank you for this.
So we want to take a few minutes for questions, but if you're going to ask a question, you have a microphone in front of you. It's a little round metal thing. If you tap the bottom of it and it goes solid red, that means you can ask your question so we can all hear it, and then when you're through with your question, tap it again. If it's blinking, it means you're in the queue to ask a question. Okay? All right. So who wants to ask the first question?
Only if you're the inner consent. Was it that clear? Yeah.
Of course, my wife would figure it out. I'll just start asking the question. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm wondering, the third wave of behavioral therapy is like acceptance and commitment therapy and mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. They seem to be a step closer to this position. So what I'm wondering, if you think how close they are, or what the differences are in the that still remain, because they talk obviously about acceptance and commitment. I think Stephen Hayes would also talk about picking a valued direction. So it sounds, like the behavioral stuff is moving a lot closer to EA. So I'm wondering what you think are the differences still. And the second part of the question is, benefits of training in EA, if there are differences, versus one of these behavioral approaches, if you think there are differences in the training.
The main difference between the ACT, Stephen Hayes ACT, the acceptance commitment therapy, and EA, extension analysis, I see in the concept. EA is an existential concept, a personalistic concept, and ACT is a behavioral concept. So behavioralism is based on learning, and existential psychology is based on coming from a philosophical background, is based on an understanding, anthropological understanding of the person. And so in our concept we speak, we have different languages which come close to in the acting, come close to in different movements, come close in the acting. But we see maybe even a bit more on the aspect of freedom than in behavioral therapy, which is more technical and methodological, even in fact, than in our application of this knowledge. Our application of this knowledge is very dialogical and phenomenological. This means really open and listening to what the client, the patient say, and trying to understand first, you do not apply any method. Only at a certain degree or later on becomes a method. I would see that the main difference. And maybe, yeah, this concept of living in the consent and all around this is not so developed in tech, whereas in tech, they have developed more technical tools than we did. So this can go together quite well, I think. And I see in tech a real movement in the current CBT towards existentialist thinking or perspective.
Yeah. And then in terms of training?
In terms of training, our training is centered on developing your own personality. Because we know from almost all investigation about the effectiveness of psychotherapy that the main tool is the personality of the psychotherapist and not the method. The impact of the personality of the psychotherapist is 2 to 3 times as higher than the impact of the methodology. Therefore, our training is based on self-experience, on developing the own access to oneself and to understand better and feel better and dialoguing better, and not so much in developing the application of tools or methods of techniques. And this I see I know Stephen Hayes goes in that way very much, so we are coming really close. But there are certainly some differences there. I do not know how elementary they are, finally, but sounds like the first time. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, I'm curious about the question. I just want to make sure I understand what points you made. You said life itself intrinsically is good, right?
Life is?
Life is intrinsically good.
I didn't say that. That would be, life can be very terribly true. What I said was that I can personally feel that it is good that. It is good to live, but there may be people who do not feel that. There are people who do not feel that. So it would become an ideology if we would say life is intrinsically good. My relation to life can be in a way that I can experience a quality in life. And life can have a quality which I can experience. I'm related to this. It is a slight difference, which is in practice maybe not so big, but in theory it makes a difference between a psychology and an ideology.
If the quality of life is good, and you talk about the meaning of life, so is life, is the meaning of life discovered or created?
Is the meaning of that discomfort?
Discovered or
created? Discovered or created. That's a very intriguing question. These are totally different philosophies. In logotherapy, in existential analysis, we have concept of meaning of life or the meaning of a situation is given and has to be detected and is not created by myself. Whereas the constructivists, Marcelic and so on, say the meaning is created. The difference is the constructivism and most psychologists are projected. They are, they see the human being as producing a concept after which he can follow. And in existential analysis, we see the human being as an open being which has to understand in which he finds himself. This is this being in the world, in the Weltsein of Martin Heidegger, for instance, that we are there, we do not create the world, as the constructivists say. We create a certain understanding, of course. So in this we are close again. But ultimately, we are facing something which is different to ourselves. And with this difference, with this otherness with which we have to deal, this otherness is fecundizing, is challenging, is speaking to us. So we really believe or we think in our concept that when we speak to somebody else, that I can encounter a being which is not me. Whereas in constructivism, I always encounter myself. I project, also deep in that psychology, I project my needs, etc., and what I encounter in the other is my own projection. So it remains subjective, it remains built into the own bubble of the ego or the self. Whereas in existentialism, we see an openness which we try to make practical by the application of the phenomenology, of this letting aside, bracketing whatever is given as notion, as prejudice, as justice, as prejudice, as knowledge, let them be and let come in what you see, what you listen, what you perceive, and watch it, how it is for you. This otherness can come together with you, and then in this unity, out of this unity, you can understand what is going on. So the meaning of this situation, for instance, is if it is the real existential meaning, this means that I am open to what is going on. If I only construct meaning, you have me to talk until you have, because it's meaningful for me. But it wouldn't be meaningful for the situation, because you get tired, you will go home, and I will be the last person in that room and not stopping my talking. But because it's still meaningful to me, that would be a projected, subjective meaning, a created meaning. But the perceived meaning means that I may have different wishes, I may have whatever plans, but does it really fit into this reality? Is that corresponding to the others here? And to bring together the otherness and the own, to bring that bridge, this means finding, this means in a more philosophical way, basically thinking, this means finding meaning. So, meaning must be detected, says one, and not projected. And a projected meaning can never be an existential meaning, because what is projected from me does not have that much substance and basis and fundaments, then something which is really in the situation and I can perceive, surely some subjective interpretations, etc., the perception of reality is a difficult issue, but something behind that what we perceive is really there. So reality can correct us. In difference to some people who say, I made up my mind and disturbing the facts. We should be open to corrections in reality. This is basically in science. All scientific theory is just a hypothesis which is valid as long as it is not contradicted by reality. Therefore, Jonas says that natural science is in a constant crisis. Yeah.
How do you define reality?
What is theory?
By who?
It's there. It is there. It gives resistance.
It gives resistance?
Yeah. It is a resistance.
Who does it give resistance to?
It's being.
It's
being. That is the fact, the effect of being is that it is a substance, or it is not, it cannot swipe the wind. I have to count with it.
It cannot be swept away.
It can be gone, like physically, but this is the physical reality, but let's say the economic reality is also a reality which we could not change in Europe in the last couple of years very much. Although many people have liked. So this means it gives resistance. It has to be approached appropriately. This means reality.
Well, I'm going to try to make my question complete. I've been thinking of it a lot. I read, when I was younger, Rilke, Letters to a Young Poet. But I was thinking a lot about living with the questions, even though I don't have the answers, things like that. And then when I moved on to Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning, these became like my two bedside books too, that I would keep reread and help me. And I'm reading now Erich Fromm, and again, it's really connects with me. So I'm finding, I'm mid-age right now, and I'm finding I'm in this place where I totally see what you mean. I'm giving myself birth, like a second, you know, like living with all that. But I'm wondering, you know, living with the question, finding what it is, the sense in me, and there's like difficulty and then also joy at the same time, the pain and the joy at the same time, and it's even greater. But the thing is, in North America, you know, I don't know what is experience, I'm experiencing that here in North America, I find this can be also a very lonely place, because we live in a world of consumerism, and finding or meaning outside, you know, from outside. And then, so this is a big, I find it a difficult place to be. So what advice would you have to, I'm committed to what I'm, you know, but sometimes I feel the joy and the pain is there, but sometimes I feel extreme isolation and loneliness. That's what I'm, what would you say? I am there, or I don't know if it's part unfortunately from North America, because, you know, that's why sometimes I cut the media, I cut the radio, I don't cut myself from the world, I'm with the world, it could be by walking in the forest. But I find this is the, sometimes the struggle into, you know?
The struggle of
there's an isolation, right? It's the road, it's the path most difficult to travel, living with the wife for now until. So this is not an easy place, I accept to be, but it's not always an easy place to be. And it's not a place that is valued in North America, I find, to be. In a world where people say, well, do you have a home? You don't have a car, you don't have a
I have the impression that you are a very sensitive personality. You reflected a lot, you read a lot, and you developed yourself a lot. But you may apply the existential term, for instance, right now, and ask yourself, well, I feel a bit isolated, or it's maybe difficult where I am. What could be my contribution? Not in North America, but let's say with my family and with my friends, where I feel isolated. But is this consumerism culture asking from me, wanting from me, how could I contribute? What could I do? For instance, bringing up this question is really already a step towards that. So, don't give up, don't resign. Try to speak out what you experience, what you see, and to look at how can I find steps, the way, how I can do it, I can make something together. And this is life. Then you participate with your life. And you certainly have perceived something very valuable. And maybe with a deeper sense of what's going on than maybe you have the chance that you are not so occupied with making money and many others, so that you have the space to cultivate deeper humanism. And how can you contribute? How can you share your gain, what you gain with others? That is the big question. And of course, that is sometimes not easy to find an appropriate way. But this is a big challenge. And maybe you find one or other people with whom you can come together, work together. Is that a reference to what you wrote up? Yeah. We hope for a paradise, but we have to work in a dirty, hurting world, which has also its good sides, but also has many obstacles. Is a reality which is existing. Thank you.
Time for one last question.
Yeah, you had one before.
Seems to me that it's essentially some new talk about
this one.
It's just on present moments. In the moment. Do I understand correctly?
You stress being present in the moment?
Yeah.
Okay. He's asking, do you stress, highlight being present in the moment?
Present in the moment, yeah. Sure.
Okay. If that's the case, then is there any room for becoming that concept, allow that concept to come in, becoming?
Becoming, yeah.
Yeah. So how to reconcile being and becoming?
Oh, yeah. This is a very good question. The whole concept of meaning is
the way from being to becoming, from what I'm here, what I'm experiencing and seeing it, doing now, is now open towards the future. And I participate, I contribute, that what is becomes something else, becomes something better, becomes something more. That my knowledge on philosophy, while I'm reading a book, becomes more. So objects are becoming changing. Relationships are becoming changing. And through this, I am becoming. The essence of being is in becoming. Our essence is not that what we are. Our essence is that we have a potential to become who we really are, who we are ultimately are, to become more who we are. So we are in a constant process of change in the outer world, where we continue, in the inner world, in becoming oneself. The becoming is the great chance of being ourselves. If we are not open and working on this, becoming more ourselves, then we are dead.
So being is the foundation of becoming.
Right. Being is the foundation of becoming.
So to become our accents.
Yeah.
So what's that?
To become our
essence. To become essence.
What is that? What's the meaning of that concept?
Becoming, I said, my being is essentially a process of transition to change, to grow, to have better access to myself. And that is the becoming.
Would there be any ultimate end of that becoming, that process?
Are you asking, is there an ultimate end at the of the process of becoming?
Yeah, the end is death.
Yeah, what's that?
What's death?
Yeah. What is the end of that process?
Yeah, death is defined biologically that this basis of our life, our existence, is no more carrying us anymore. When the physical basis, the neurological basis, is no more functioning, then we disappear in that form as we are present. What is afterwards, we do not know as psychology.
The reason I ask that is one of my observations about life is a lot of people, they suffer because they have a problem to deal with death.
Yeah.
Death kill all the meanings. So that's why they turn to religion.
Yeah.
What's your response to it?
Yeah. Death kills all meaning. Some people suffer from this, and therefore they become religious, you say.
Yeah.
Or some.
Because
religion
gives them meaning. Beyond death.
Yeah. We are both mortal. Nevertheless, you ask, and I try to answer, and we are both here. Although we are mortal, and we find it to be meaningful. We do the best, not knowing what at the end eventually will come out and how it will be after death. But having a clear sense and a good understanding that this is interesting, this is good to work with, this is helpful to try to understand. That is the existential meaning. This is the existential meaning remains meaningful also when I die, because it was valuable at the moment. The other question which is behind is the question of for the ontological meaning, for the meaning of being. The meaning, what meaning does it have that I exist, that there is a world, that there are human beings? What meaning does it have that there is HIV, or that there is cancer, that there is, that there are earthquakes? This question of this ontological meaning, this is not a psychological question, this is a philosophical question and a theological question. This is the question of to which the religions give answer. The psychological question is the question to what can I do, how can I contribute to a meaningful life. This means its orientation. The ontological question for meaning is the question of what meaning is given to what exists. When I have a pencil, I know the purpose and the meaning of a pencil because I created it. But I didn't create the earth, I didn't create myself, I didn't create not even my children. So, to know what is the meaning of what is there, we have to ask the one who created it. And if it is by chance, we will not get an answer. And if it is by God, religions try to give us answers. And philosophical thoughts may help us to understand more. But ultimately, this is an issue of belief. And everyone has a belief in this. A religious belief, a Christian belief, a Buddhist belief, an atheistic belief, which is also belief. Nobody knows. So, we are like living on an island surrounded by the immensity of an ocean, which is much bigger and which we cannot encompass or embrace. It transcends us. This is the nature of our existence, that we are surrounded by a big ocean. We have a sense of it, and this sense is called spirituality. We feel there is something bigger. May it be a cosmic feeling, or may it be a religious belief, or whatever, but there is something bigger, and we are not the biggest in the universe. We are happy if we can manage with that little that we are.
Thank you for your question. Well, Alfred, I'd like to thank you on behalf of all of us for taking your time and sharing this talk with us. And we hope that you detect the value of this lovely Pinot Noir from BC, and that it might lead to an intensification of your experiential value.
Thank you.
We also have a few books here for sale for $20.